Hello and welcome to another episode of Meenal's World. Thank you for all your support last week with regards to releasing the YouTube video. I was very excited to film that. It's something I've been dreaming about for years since we started Desi Outsiders. And I remember just talking to myself when I released the first episode of Desi Outsiders and I said, one day I'll be capable of filming a full feature video and getting it out on YouTube and trying to get into that sort of pocket of social media as well, because, you know, everyone listens to podcasts on iTunes and Spotify. Some people prefer to actually see the guests in person on YouTube, for example, and I think it's really important to see that side of the guests as well. The next video that I'm going to release, it's a very emotional one. My guest was just absolutely incredible and very honest. I teared up, my guest teared up, the video guy teared up, and that will be coming out in a couple of weeks. And I can't wait for you to see it. And I wish I had more time and resources to do more of these. I just haven't had a chance to, but I hope it picks up over the next few months. I've created like a little podcast studio at home now where I can record my episodes, and it's like my happy place. It's my little space where I can be creative and speak to my guests. That noise is Radhika playing in her playpen at the moment, because I've been at home all day by myself. I've had no help, and I'm just at the last resort now, where I've just stuck Radhika with lots of toys, and hopefully she can entertain herself while I record about 10 minutes of an intro and outro for this podcast. But my guest this week, more importantly, is someone I didn't get in touch with. The reverse happened this time. She got in touch with me. And it was very interesting to see why she wanted to be on the show. We spoke a lot about what it's like to be in the Bollywood industry and why she's chosen to take the path of independent filmmaking. And it's interesting because she's someone who came from the US and moved to India. And as I mentioned in the episode, a lot of the time it's the opposite way. It's a lot of Indians leave India to go to the US, but she's done it the other way around. So to see how she adapted and adjusted is an interesting story, and one that I could never do. I don't think I could live in India. And it's not because I don't like India. I love everything about it, and I wish I had more time to explore it. But the whole lifestyle is completely different. And it's also the same thing, you know, like going back to, for example, living in Czech Republic. I don't think I can go back there because of the climate. The lifestyle is slightly different. The things I like are not so readily available. And I couldn't do it. So, you know, hats off to people who can adjust in new conditions like that. Especially in India, being a girl in Mumbai in a big hustle and bustle city where there are lots of stigmas attached and lots of problems attached to a young single girl trying to thrive and trying to be successful. So my conversation with Trisha was fun, and Radhika was with me the whole way through, and Trisha was very, very kind and very patient with me. I really hope you take something away from this episode. And the main thing that I took away from this was that we're all trying to culture ourselves and our families, and we're all trying to educate ourselves in different ways. And no matter how much we try, no matter how much we read, no matter how much we think we know, there's always more to know. And I think that's a very humbling thing and a very humbling fact we need to accept. And no matter how proud we feel of our culture, no matter how dedicated we are to learning more about our values and our traditions, just remember, there's always more to learn. And there's no room for judgment. There's no need to be judging other people, because we're all in the same boat. I mean, we're a generation where we're trying to figure ourselves out. And to see other people in the same position as myself, where we still don't really know where we fit in, is very comforting. And Trisha was very patient with me, especially with Radhika. And I'm very grateful to have spoken to her. And I can't wait, absolutely cannot wait for her movie to be released. And I love, absolutely love all her energy and her passion for what she does. I really hope I can learn from her. And I can't wait to see where she will be in the next few months, because this woman is going places, and I'm really honored to have spoken to her. So I hope you enjoyed this episode. Welcome to the show, Trisha. Thank you so much for joining me today. And I apologize for the time confusion.
No worries. Thank you for having me.
No, that's okay. Actually, it was quite convenient that we got the times mixed up, because Radhika decided to poop all over me. So I had an emergency nappy change. So I'm just feeding her now as we do the interview. And I can just see her staring right at me like, what is my mommy doing right now? Why isn't she giving me all her... She's 10 weeks now.
Oh, what a baby.
Yeah, so she's very needy, and I don't blame her. I mean, she's only 10 weeks old, but she needs all my attention all the time. When she's sleeping, I have a couple of hours of respite, which is when I can do things like prepare for this interview. So thank you for joining me, Trisha. I know how busy you are. I've seen your Instagram. I've seen your social media. Do you ever sleep?
You know, I'm not sure. Sometimes I do. I say jokingly that I never sleep, but I hold my sleep time very like sacrosanct. So, is that her? She's like, yeah, me too.
She's ruined my sleep, Trisha. Like, I was talking to a friend the other day, and the fact that I've had broken sleep for 10 weeks has had such a mental impact on me. I don't even know like what day it is. I don't know what my, like, how are we already in October almost?
Oh yeah. I feel like I slept through all of this.
Yeah. I feel like I've been sleeping since March, since the whole pandemic hit. Time is just going by so quickly in front of us. And at the same time, I still feel like I'm frozen in time.
Yeah, it's this weird state of the world. And that's something I've been trying to like remind myself that, you know, it feels like nothing's happening, but you still have to keep moving on and working and getting stuff done.
Yeah.
Time stops for no one.
But Trisha, you were supposed to be in India right now. Is that right?
Yes. So I've been in India for the last 3 years, since 2017. And the only reason I'm back in the States right now is because of COVID. And, I had to leave. I got a call one morning, and less than 24 hours later, I had flown from Punjab to Mumbai, which is where I stay, and then on a plane from Mumbai back to the US.
Wow. So you moved to India in 2017. What was that transition like? Because I only know a few people who've moved from US to India. Usually it's the other way around. Majority of people go from India to Europe or to the US, but when I go to India to visit my family, I find it difficult to stay for long, long periods of time, mainly because the lifestyle is so different. And I think one of the things that affects me the most is the quality of air. I know it sounds really petty, but just like in Delhi, especially, the pollution is so thick. I can't stay there for too long. I just feel very uncomfortable. What was it like for you to move from New Jersey, is that right?
So actually, my family stays in Florida. So I moved from Florida to Mumbai directly.
Yeah. And what was that? What was it like to have that transition?
It was, I want to say I anticipated it, but also there are so many things that you can't just adequately be prepared for. So it was a very interesting transition. Growing up, for I think every other year at least, we would go to India. So I'm very familiar with traveling there. We've traveled around the country as well. I'm, you know, pretty well versed in what it feels like to be a fish out of water in India.
Mm-hmm.
I also knew going in that the culture was very, I also knew going in that the culture is very different, and that the sense of community is very big, and all these factors that you think of when you're like, okay, how Indian society works, I kind of already knew, but it's like jumping into a bucket full of ice. Like, you know what it's going to be like, and you kind of do your best to prepare. But once you jump in, you're like, oh my God, this is intense. This is more than I thought it was. So even things like the language, I actually did not grow up speaking Hindi fluently. And so So I had to learn Hindi just kind of on the job. As soon as I hit the ground, I was like, all right, I need to learn Hindi better. I have immersive practice. I'm a very independent person. So I don't like people checking in on me. I don't like people stopping by randomly. I don't like having to tell people where I'm going. And I've been pretty lucky in that my autonomy has been really well respected by everyone that I've interacted with in India. But there's definitely things like people checking in on you. My family was, of course, very concerned. My Indian family.
Yeah.
They're like, how is she going to get around by herself? She doesn't know anyone. She doesn't speak Hindi. And so they were constantly checking in on me. And I've grown to really appreciate that aspect of Indian culture where there is, it's not just we're entitled to your time, but it's we're part of a community and we care about you. And we express that through showing up or calling you or, you know, doing all these things. So it's a very different type of life, but there are definitely growing pains in adjusting no matter how mentally prepared you are.
Mm. No, it's interesting that you've taken that sort of positive angle from it, that you, when people ask where you're going and how you're doing, you see it as a form of love and affection. I'd get quite fed up of it, to be honest.
I'll be honest, looking back on it, you always tend to look back on it with fondness. After going through that hurdle of, okay, yes, I see, you know, there were so many things that I clashed with a lot. I'm an Aries and I very much identify with that like fighting spirit.
Mm.
So even things like I clashed with family a little bit there. Mm-hmm. I clashed with the expectation of time when you're on a job. I clashed with, you know, the guy who sells me nariyal pani, like all of these things. And I hated it. I'll be honest, like the first 8 to 12 months was such a struggle. I was angry. I was cranky. I was negative about it all the time. And I felt like, when is this ever going to stop? You know?
Well, the question is, Tricia, I should have asked this at the beginning. Why did you move to India?
Because, oh my gosh, that's such a big, question. And I think at the end of the day, the reason I moved was to pursue an artistic career. Mm. And the type of art that I have always done growing up has been heavily Indian inspired. So I've been dancing since I was 6. I started by doing Bharatanatyam and then became a competitive dancer. And I've trained in Garba and Ras and Bhanga. Mm. And I see in growing up in the US, I see that a lot of Eastern art styles and specifically Eastern dance forms aren't respected or held to a standard of you must train or learn in them as Western dance styles are. So ballet, even things like hip hop or salsa, those are dance styles that are not necessarily like colonial or white in origin, but there's still a community that says, hey, you have to train in this. These are some basics that you need to know. And then you can take your artistry from there. And when it comes to Indian art forms, we don't see that in our culture, not even among the Indian community here. And so what I wanted to do was learn a little bit more about Indian dance, a little bit more about Indian culture and I wanted to show people that Indian dance is worthy of respect and training specifically in order to authentically represent it.
Mm.
And something I actually didn't realize once I got to India is that oftentimes Indians ourselves don't think that it's necessary. So if we're not going to speak up for our own dance forms, what's to say anyone else in the world will?
No, I completely agree with that, Tricia. And I think that we all love our culture in some form or another, right? Whether it's a very diluted form or a very concentrated form. And I feel I have been learning so much throughout the last few years that 5 years ago when I said, oh, I'm completely Indian, I'm this year, I know everything about my culture. Actually, I didn't really know much. It's only now that I've started to read more about it and read about it with pride. I think that we tend to label ourselves as Indian or Desi or British Asian or American Indians, and that's fine. There's nothing wrong with that. But there are very few of us who really question our true sense of identity and question things like, why are we not learning these dance forms as seriously as we should? And I think this conversation needs to be had. And I think we need to talk about it a lot more, because there has to be an aspect of some sort of aspect of respect. Because if you look at Bharatanatyam, for example, it isn't just a dance form. It's so much more than that.
Mm-hmm. It's a storytelling form.
Yeah. And it's a, you know, it's to some extent, it's a form of prayer as well. So I really admire that you had that sort of feeling to say, okay, I want to make sure that these dance forms are respected and their stories are not lost through generations. So when you...
Even to that point is when, especially right now in the last like 5-ish years, there's been a really big voice growing among the Desi diaspora of, hey, we need to reclaim our culture. We need to speak up. We need to have more representation, which I think is phenomenal. And something that I was also, I won't say that I was at the forefront of it, but I was supporting and reading and doing all these things. And after moving to India, I realized as a diaspora, what we think is necessarily authentic Indian culture or what we think we're reclaiming in the right way, I don't see that stuff resonating with my colleagues and my friends in India. I think there's a very big gap in the realities between people who are in India and people who are in the diaspora of what is authentic culture? How do we reclaim our culture? How do we modernize it? And that's not to say that one is better or worse than the other. I just think that conversation isn't there. And I think the diaspora is very vocal about what is our experience, that we sometimes forget to ask, what are the original influences of what our experience is?
No, I think the issue is, Tricia, I think that we are trying to some extent, modernize so that it's relatable in our generation. I remember a couple of months ago, before COVID, I went to a mantra meditation, Kirtan night, and it was led by a Hare Krishna devotee who was white. And she was explaining the mantras in a very, I would say, simple form so people could understand. And my friend who was with me, who's also Desi, was quite offended by it. She's like, why has she simplified it? Because that's not the true meaning. But then you have to ask a question, is that if you really go deep into what it means, will we understand it? Are we capable of understanding it with the knowledge that we have? So it's very difficult to find that balance, I think. But my curiosity is, Tricia, what was the difference you found between people in America, for example, and people in India? Because you did say that there was a gap.
Right. I have so many things to say to this, actually. But I think one of the biggest things is that people in India are so excited when we see... I feel like I'm split between both right now. But people in India are very excited when they see Indian culture. And I say India because that's the majority of my experience. I can't speak to the rest of South Asia, but they're very excited to see Indian culture elsewhere in the world. And they're excited to see it represented. And it's cool. And they encourage that. And, you know, you see these travel videos of tourists going somewhere and Indian locals, you know, are giving them garlands and gifts and all these things. And like, please take everything, or cheering or clapping when someone says namaste, right? Like, it's a community-based thing. Whereas I feel like in the diaspora, and I use that term very, very broadly here, but I guess in the US, the interactions that I've seen have been, you're making an effort, but I'm going to criticize you, or you're not doing right, or there's other ways to do this, or this isn't the way that I've done it, so therefore it's wrong. And I think we forget, you know, there's so many experiences, and it's really hard to have one strong voice among all of us saying, hey, respect our culture. But then also, you know, there's so many different voices, so it could be really widely disseminated. But you had said something about, you had made a really good point that I wanted to speak to before your question. it was about the simplifying. So I think someone that I worked with in India had once said, just because something is simple doesn't mean it's not beautiful or engaging.
Mm.
And I think the idea of simplifying a concept doesn't mean that you are blurring out all the lines and dumbing it down, right? Simplifying isn't dumbing it down. Simplifying is getting to the core root of something, of what is the one underlying concept. If you can say it in a sentence and that resonates with someone, I think that's a really good starting point. We shouldn't have to do an hour-long lecture of why a certain ritual is the way it is, because that's not going to endear someone to want to learn about the culture more. They're going to say, this is a lecture, this isn't fun.
Yeah.
Whereas, I mean, there are things that are fun and not fun in every culture, but in order to spread that, you want to get people excited. And a way to get them excited is ultimately boil it down to, what is the purpose of this?
Mm. No, Tricia, just going back to what you were saying about how people in India seem to be overly excited when they see the culture in other parts of the world. With the same token, I also feel that there's this sort of hyper-Westernization that's happening in India. They get excited to bring other parts of other cultures from other parts of the world into their country and into their lifestyle. You know, something I always say, that when I go back to India, I feel like I'm more Desi or more Indian than my own cousins who were born in India. I remember when I was a kid, I used to wake up in the morning and my cousins were awake as well. And I'd say, well, aren't you going to do your morning prayers? And they would just laugh at me, like, who does that?
I agree. I think that's a really good point. There are elements of India that are very, I guess hyper-Western is a good way to put it, but very Westernized generally. So even in Mumbai, the most well-known dance schools in Mumbai, in terms of training, are Western-based. They're ballet, they're jazz, even hip-hop.
Really?
Yeah, you don't see, those are the popular ones. Those are the ones that everyone wants to train in. And even when I moved to India, everyone's like, oh, you must be ballet trained. And I'm like, yeah, I've taken baby ballet like twice when I was 6 years old. Like, that's the extent of my training. But even in terms of culture, right? And this is something I've thought a lot about growing up, is in the US, we have to make an active effort to be surrounded by our culture because it's not everywhere.
Sorry, I'm just going to bring Radhika on the screen because she's just getting a bit bored of the position.
What a cutie. More than welcome to join us if she has anything to say.
I will, yeah. She's just writing her notes.
Oh, perfect. Good. listen good. So the effort that it takes to surround ourselves with our own culture in the West means that it has to come from us. So it's a very individually initiated type of thing. Whereas in India, Indian culture is everywhere. You know, you don't have to go out and seek it. It will come to you. My friends lived right next to a mandir. So, you know, we'd hear puja every single day. You never had to go out and seek that experience because it's always there. And so perhaps even that's what's happening in India, is they're initiating Western culture in their own daily experiences, and we're initiating Eastern culture in ours.
Yeah, and I think there'll never be the right balance. There'll be some of us who go to either extreme. Some of us may even hit the sweet spot, but it's a conversation that will go on for many generations, I think.
Absolutely. I feel like you're damned if you do, damned if you don't. Someone's always going to have something to say.
So. Yeah, you're right, Tricia. But, you know, you seem to have this passion and love for Desi culture and history as well. where did it all stem from? Was it your upbringing? Was it something you saw or an experience you had?
Honestly, I love being Indian. I feel like I got so lucky being born Indian. We have the best cultures, plural, on the planet. Yeah. The best foods, the best festivals, everything. And I've truly loved the, oh gosh, this sounds weird, but I truly love the vibrancy and brilliance of Indian culture. And I say that full well knowing that there's so many different types of Indian culture. Mm. Because, you know, relics of the colonialism and all of that grouping of people together. But it feels like it's a constant exploration. There's so many things that I didn't, I thought I knew everything when I was growing up in America. I was like, you know, I'm Punjabi. I know all about Punjabi culture. I grew up in a Gujarati community. I know everything about Garba and Navratri, all these things. And then, you know, I know what a typical Indian looks like. And I know that people go to Mandir and I know the stories growing up. And then I got to India and I learned there's so much more that I don't know. I didn't know anything about the Seven Sisters, which are the seven northeastern states in India. Mm. I had no idea about, you know, the conversation that's constantly happening about what a normal, quote unquote, Indian person looks like. There are a lot of holidays and festivals like Onam that I didn't know existed. And it's very cool to be part of this culture that has so many cultures in it. Mm. So I've always loved learning growing up. And I think that's kind of where it stems into the fact that it is a constant state of learning. And you think you know one thing and then you'll learn something else. And it's like, oh, cool. That's an experience I've never had, but it's tied to me in some way. And I feel like I need to learn that. But when I was younger, much younger, I want to say I did what was very common for us kids growing up in the 90s, which was I didn't embrace my culture that much. I actually hated going to Bharatanatyam class. I never wanted to go. I would fight my parents on it every week. They never gave me a sick day. I hated eating Indian food for dinner every day. And I would always complain, Indian food again. Like, why can't we have this? Why can't we have that?
I remember speaking to Vidya Vox on our previous podcast. And she said that she hated like her mom giving her rajma chawal in a tiffin for lunch. And it used to stink.
I was pretty lucky. Lucky, I guess, is a terrible term to use. But I was at the time very grateful that my parents did not send me to school with Indian food. Okay. My parents, like, they did a decent job of kind of respecting our very dumb sensibilities of a you know, under 10-year-old in the 90s, but also, you know, making sure to, like, have us, like, let us have Indian food for dinner. And now I miss it all the time.
Yeah. But, Trisha, you told me that you have some experience in Bollywood as well. Mm-hmm. I can't remember which movie it was. But there was this program on BBC where they were talking about what a Bollywood set looks like. And it was one dance routine where most of the backup dancers were white girls. And that really shocked me because I genuinely like never thought about that. to have a movie industry in India and then to fly people out from other parts of the world just seems quite crazy to me, considering the amount of talent and, you know, the resources that India itself has. Why are you outsourcing backup dancers? but I want to ask you, and obviously you can answer this question to however you feel, but what is it like being a backup Bollywood dancer? Is it the dream that you thought it was, or was it quite different from what you perceived?
Okay, I think we all grow up thinking, you know, Bollywood backup dancer is the dream. Like, it's going to be a lot of fun. It's super glamorous. And it is super glamorous when you can post about it on Instagram and share photos. But the reality of the job is it is not fun.
Really?
And it's not. And I mean, there are parts of it that I really enjoy, but I did Bollywood backup dancing, I think, only a handful of gigs. And every time I do it, I'm reminded that, you know, this isn't exactly what I want to do. People in my communities growing up, we would always say, like, we're a creative person. Therefore, like, it makes sense for us to be a Bollywood backup dancer because we're artists. But that's not what the original concept of a Bollywood backup dancer was. And this is something I learned after moving to India, was in the original base of, when Bollywood was originally growing and becoming what it is today, they needed bodies to move on set. It wasn't, we're looking for the most talented dancers.
Mm.
It was, we need bodies that can move, and we need cheap bodies because we have so many expenses that go into shooting anything. Like, you know, you have several thousand people on set and they all have to get paid, and you have to feed them, and you have to pay for all the props and the equipment and the lighting and the electricity that you generate, because you can't just plug it in. You'll, you know, throw off the power grid. But you need cheap bodies to be on set, and they just need to move in a coordinated enough fashion.
Hmm.
And that puts Bollywood backup dancers, that history, that origin, puts Bollywood backup dancers at the bottom of the food chain. No one cares if you're hurt. No one cares what your costume looks like. No one actually, I want to say there are some brilliant dancers that I have danced with in the Bollywood circuit. And you'll always see them in the movies. You're going to see them up front. You're going to see them right next to the main stars. But there are a lot of people that are there who are just bodies, and they're not coordinated, and they don't understand the dance moves. But are they close enough, and are they dancing with energy? Yes. So I don't want this to sound like a bashing of the profession, because it's not. It is a ton of hard work. You're in rehearsals for 12 plus hours a day. Mm. And most of the time they'll tell you what the rehearsal time is. And then as soon as rehearsal is over, they say you have another like 5 hour practice after this. We've just decided. And you don't have a choice. You have to go. Mm. So it's a very thankless job. There's a lot of, as in any industry or any profession, there's a lot of politics that go into it. But for me, I wanted something where I would have a voice as to my thoughts and my creativity. And being a Bollywood backup dancer didn't offer me that avenue.
And what are like the main actors and actresses like with these backup dancers? Do they have a chance to sort of communicate with them and interact with them? Or is it just a case of, I'm going to dance with this group of people, get the shot done and move on?
I think it's a little bit of both. It just really depends on the dynamic. So if it's a dance group that's, like, a choreographer usually has their core team, right, their assistants, and then they will hire out. And usually if you're in that profession, you'll consistently work with the same people over and over, or if you're, you know, contracted with that choreographer, you'll stay with them. And I would imagine that sometimes you get familiar with the artists. Like, I know a couple assistant choreographers who are tight with, you know, the big stars, and they'll post about each other. But then also there's a chance that you'll never speak to the artist that you're dancing right next to. I have seen both of those things happen.
Mm. Well, I guess it does depend on who you're working with. But I mean, let's try and look at the positive side. Is there anything that you what did you enjoy about being a Bollywood backup dancer? Because to see yourself on the big screen must have been I guess to some extent a dream come true.
Yes and no. I mean, to be honest, it was a really cool experience, and I don't want to sound like it wasn't. It just wasn't the right experience for what I wanted to do. The cool thing about getting on set is that I was able to see how everything works, and I got to see the machine of the beast from the inside out. From a distance, of course, I didn't get to be involved in the decision making, but getting that understanding of how a set works and why a set works, and seeing the qualities that I admired in whoever was directing that set, and the things that I didn't like, and how the logistics were going, and how I felt interacting with certain coordinators on set, that gave me so much invaluable insight into how I choose to run my sets and the kinds of people that I want to work with, and ultimately how I want to be as someone who's a decision maker.
That's really interesting, Trisha, because my husband is a guitarist. He plays for a music band as well. And he used to take me to all these gigs, and he's into rock music, indie. And I mean, to be honest, I didn't really enjoy it at the start. I was like, I was listening to my Bhangra and like my Coke studio. And then he took me to like Queens of the Stone Age. And I was like, okay, this is very different to what I'm used to. But he had the same mentality. He said, it's not so much about being present in the concert and the gig. Of course it is, but a lot of it is to learn, what are these people doing before they go on set? How are they setting up? What is the stage looking like? And sometimes you have to just go through these moments, no matter how boring or painful it is. You have to use the you have to use that time and take advantage of it in some way or another. And I think you hit the nail on the head saying that, you know, how can you learn from all of that? So now you're working on your own film.
I am.
And are you doing a lot of the shooting in India or in the US?
Actually, we've completed shooting already. We shot it before COVID.
Oh, you didn't tell me, Trisha. I was hoping I'd be like, you know, the star of the film, and Radhika was ready.
I got a great opportunity for you. Got one coming up. I'm so sorry about that. Listen, I was really hoping to cast you, but it was just not possible.
Next time.
Right, of course. So we actually did finish shooting before COVID. It was entirely shot in Mumbai, guerrilla style. And it has been a journey, but I guess I should start from the beginning. It's so crazy. The journey, when you try and put it linearly, is very difficult to untangle. It's like three iPhone headphones kind of jumbled together at once.
Wow.
In 2018, I had put together a video, just a short dance video. It was a single take, but I directed all of the camera movements. I directed the people. I chose the location. It was a baby step in what is it like to put on a production. And I loved the process so, so much. So I thought to myself, you know, what if I came up with a story and made a short dance film? So I sat on that for a while. And towards the end of 2018, I started writing an idea. And I thought, I'll do a short story. It'll maybe be a couple minutes long. Maybe I'll have like max five people on set. And this will be my baby film school. Now I know that I like it. Let me see if I can do it with like actual coordination. And the concept grew out of a dance film. Now it's an actual film with a storyline. It's about 10 minutes long. And as I kept pitching this idea to people, they would say, I love this idea. Let me bring someone else in to help you with set design. Let me bring someone to do costumes. Let me bring hair and makeup. And it happened by accident, but it kind of exploded into this 60 to 70 person
wow
cast and crew. Like, we have so many people. It was kind of insane. I still don't know.
But I think from what I saw on Instagram, you said that they're all female.
No. So not all female. They're all South Asian. Every single person on our team up until this point is of Indian descent.
Yeah.
Even though we're actually coordinating across four countries right now. So it's been kind of crazy to see this naturally kind of come together within the brown filmmaking community.
Mm.
But in terms of women, that's something I'm really passionate about, of course, as a woman and as a South Asian, is making sure my communities have a voice and a place to speak. 8 out of 11 of our film departments is run by women.
Mm-hmm.
And that is, it's really hard to get that kind of numbers. Now, granted, some of the people on our team are spearheading multiple departments, but 8 out of 11 departments are women run. And that makes this such a unique experience in filmmaking.
Wow, that's really amazing, Trisha. And, you know, being someone of South Asian origin and being a woman as well, to be in this bubble of filmmaking can be quite scary, because, you know, there's so many other people who are doing similar work or doing who've been in this industry for much longer than you have. So I'm sure it can be daunting at times. And what keeps you going every day? Because you are a hard worker, and I can hear the passion in your voice. I can hear the determination in your voice that you just want to keep going. What fuels you every single day to wake up and just hit the button and go?
Oh, man. I love what I do. Like, even on the days where, and I work pretty long hours now. I work 12 to 14 hours a day. And I work 7 days a week if I, you know, if no one stops me and sits me down. And even on the tough days, even when I've had terrible conversations with people, even when I've had a terrible day, I love what I do. I love coordinating things. I love taking my idea and turning it into reality. And that's something a lot of people don't realize about filmmaking, especially when it comes to directing is all about your opinion and how strongly you believe in it and how much you hold everyone who works with you to the standard of carrying that through. So it's not about, I mean, there's definitely a lot of skills in doing that, but at the end of the day, it's not about, do I have the perfect eye for things or do I know how to change the lighting on this? It's, do I believe in the story I'm telling? And for me, the story I'm telling is everything. I'm telling my own story right now, you know, I'm deciding the story of my life. And I know that's really cliche, but I'm so determined to tell the stories that I have. And I want to be able to share that, not just in my communities, but I think my opinion is important and valid and should be cherished. And there's a little bit of ego that goes into it. You can't be a successful filmmaker without ego.
Yeah. And, you know, you made a good point there, Tricia, when you said that, you know, that you love what you do and that's what keeps you going every day. I'll be very honest with Radhika now and everything else that's been going on. I do question what I'm doing sometimes because it's like, well, there are lots of other podcasts. There are lots of other South Asian women who are trying to help other mothers, for example. But everyone does it in a different way. Everyone has a unique style. And that's the beauty of this world, right? Like we're a billion people on this planet, but we all have different fingerprints. We're all unique in our own way. And we all have different ideas. And I think that's what people tend to forget before they embark on their passion projects or when they even start their passion projects. And today I was speaking to a guy who runs a YouTube channel and I was telling him about some ideas I had. And he said, Meenal, just start. That's all you have to do. Forget all of the things that you need. Forget your equipment. Forget all of that. Just start. Even if it's shit, it's fine.
100% agree with that. Actually, I second that. Just start. That's what I did. And I mean, I would have done a couple things differently, but there's never going to be a right time to start on your passion project.
Yeah.
You're never going to have all the cards lined into place. It's just show up and go. And showing up is the most important thing. You can always build the ship as you go. And I know, you know, in some contexts, that's not the right thing to do, but especially when it comes to following your dreams, it's always going to be scary.
Yeah. But when are you planning to release this film?
Honestly, as soon as I can. It's been a really long post-production process. Of course, largely because of COVID, but also because we've been coordinating across so many countries. And the thing that we've actually been stuck on a couple of small, normal parts of the production process, but we've just gotten stuck on them because of the COVID thing is, we're at a point where we're still looking for a couple of people to join our team and we're trying to get through on the editing process. So we want to finish the edits and the colors. And then also we want to finish our composition. So we're having a completely original composition by two stellar producers who are composing that together. But in order for us to finish, we're actually fundraising right now. And we had started fundraising at the beginning of COVID, but because you know, there was a lot of things going on in terms of global health and also social justice. So out of respect for that, we held off on our fundraising. But now it's kind of at the point that if we don't continue, I don't want to become a ghost filmmaker of COVID. I don't want this project to become a casualty of the pandemic. So we're starting fundraising again, and hopefully we're able to bring on a couple of people as associate producers through the fundraising process, so that we can get this film finished. And I'm hoping by the end of this year, everything locks in. We'll take it to film festivals and finally be able to show this magic thing to the world.
That's great, Tricia. I'll add the link into the description for your fundraiser, and I'll definitely share it because I know the arts and culture areas have been affected quite a lot during lockdown and during COVID. So I understand there's so many other fundraisers going on right now, but people really need to get back on their feet, people like yourself. And to hear that you're doing it with so much passion, and to see how, you know, how close this is to your heart, I really want to help you anywhere I can. But Tricia, we haven't been talking for that long, but I have to stop, because if not, I'll just keep going on and on and on. But what I do want to do, Tricia, is I want to have you back on after the film is out. That would be very interesting to see.
Love that.
Yeah, to see where you are and what's going on. But how would you like to use your platform? Because once this film is out, you would be a South Asian woman who's a filmmaker. And obviously, as you said, that your team is mainly built of South Asian people. Is this something you want to continue doing to keep empowering those of our community?
Oh, absolutely. 100%. I mean, you said it so wonderfully. I am so passionate about what I do, and I'm so passionate about my identity as a woman, and I'm so passionate about my identity as a South Asian person. And, you know, even outside of my professional work, I do a lot of projects on the side that I'm doing to pursue that. So even right now, actually, this will be super fun. If you go to Instagram and you make a little Instagram story and you go to add a GIF, if you type in Tricia, you will see a bunch of South Asian GIFs that I've made. And I'm actually releasing. Yes. Go check it out.
Oh my God. I'm going to do that on every story now.
You absolutely. And tag me if you do it, because then I'll reshare it.
Okay.
So right now I have two series up. I have a Bharatanatyam series with all the mudras and hand symbols. Mudras and hand movements. And then I also have a Bhangra series, which is authentic Bhangra movements. And then, of course, we've got a little bit of like Nakra and little things like that. But actually, my team and I were working on launching a new series for the upcoming holidays of Navratri and Diwali. So that will be out in a couple of weeks. So keep your eyes peeled for that as well.
That's amazing.
Honestly, it's been so fun, because they actually get a lot of use out of them. The reason I started this is because social media is such a driver of what our community and conversation is like. And I wasn't seeing authentic GIFs for South Asian culture. So I'm slowly building up that, library so that we can start using that. But go ahead, check it out. It'll be a lot of fun. And actually, if you have any ideas for that, because I'm open to, you know, again, other perspectives and experiences that aren't mine that I probably have no idea about. Definitely send me any recommendations if you think over your.
That would be great. Well, our listeners are listening to this, so if you have any ideas, send them over to Tricia. If anybody wants to get in touch with you for whatever reason, what's the best way to get through to you?
There are so many ways, but the two that I will say are most effective will be either Instagramming me at tricia.k or just checking out my website and hitting up the contact form, which is trichakumar.com.
Well, thank you so much for joining me, Tricia. As you can see, I've been sat here and it's just been getting darker and darker, but the conversation has been so great. I haven't even reached out for the light. I really enjoyed speaking to you, and I'm really happy that I spoke to you as well, because to speak to another woman who's pursuing her dreams and pursuing her passions and not really caring about what's around her is really refreshing to me. And it's given me a bit, it's recharged my own batteries as well. So
thank you, girl.
Thank you for joining me, Tricia. And
thank
I will
you
definitely,
so much for having
me. I'll definitely have you back once your film is out. And I really hope you consider Radhika and I for the next one.
Yes, I got. Thank you so much for having me. This has been a blast.
Thank you, Tricia. And thank you, dear listeners, for tuning in to another episode of Meenal's World. I have left Tricia's social media and details in the episode description, and I hope you enjoyed it, and I hope you enjoyed last week's YouTube video as well. And I can't promise there's always going to be a YouTube full feature video, but I'm definitely going to try to get more of those out, because the happiness that brings me is something I would never imagine. And I do this to be happy, and if I'm happy, I can bring greater content, and that's all I really want to do. On Monday, I had another guest on And this episode will be coming out next Friday. He's an incredible friend I've made over the last few months. And let's just say we were both in tears. And we had to take a bit of a pause and hit the record button again. So please stay tuned for next week's episode. And please share with everybody on your social media platforms and your friends and family. And if you want to get in touch with me, you can do so via email with meanalsworldpodcast@gmail.com. And you can also find me on social media at meanalsworld as well. So I hope you have a lovely weekend, and I'll see you all next week.